Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Here's orbit motion. Nico. CJ gets the snap. Throwing downfield, and it's picked off. Kamu Grugier-Hill, the former Texan, has it at the 20-yard line, bottled up there. Stroud's first pick of the year. Bad time for it. Never a good one. Mullins wondering if they have to snap the ball again. And they don't have to snap the ball again. It is over in Minnesota. The Vikings throttle the Texans 34-7. Houston takes its first loss of the year and gets back into the division next week with a home date against the Jaguars.
All right, that was Mark Vandermeer on the call, obviously. That was the technically the first play from scrimmage. The Kamu Grugier-Hill interception, because there was a penalty on the very first play.
Of course there was.
There was a hold on Cade Stover.
Yes, Cade Stover, who was tasked with blocking the very best pass rushers on the Vikings yesterday.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant game plan.
That was the first play, and then the last play, Nick Mullins genuflecting. 34, and not much good happened in between. 34-7, the final score yesterday. As we welcome you in on a Reaction Monday, and man, is there a lot to react to today from that game yesterday. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. I ask this with much trepidation. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. It's hard for me to move beyond some of just the idiocy and get into the deeper level stuff with this team. But there are issues that would prevent this team from certainly winning a Super Bowl. If the Vikings are in the Super Bowl, this is going to be one of those old school Super Bowls where it's not a competition at all. Remember when the Super Bowls were just the disgusting, pathetic displays
the whole
of
the 80s, man.
The great American sport, right? Yeah. Kids, there used to be a time when the Super Bowl was the worst game of the year continually.
Never competitive.
Now, it's week three. That Vikings defense did many of the same things to the 49ers the week before. Made Brock Purdy look just like he had no answers at times. Like C.J. Stroud yesterday looked like he had no answers at times. So I'm trying to remember that. But there's some consistent themes that keep popping up. I honestly wish the Texans could have played that game without so many idiotic, boneheaded things done by the offensive line that I could move beyond that. And then I really wish the offensive line had taken some measure of accountability for it afterwards. It's not a surprise to me that these guys are talking about, like, well, you know, they didn't tell us that they were going to call us for lining up too deep in the backfield. Did you watch any football at all this year? Did you watch the very first game of the year? It's a point of emphasis. And offensive linemen have known now for a couple years since they started emphasizing this that all you got to do is check with the official.
Who is that on?
That's on Laremy Tunsil. That's on Titus Howard.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you check with the official. You're like a receiver. You check to be sure you're okay. But then, too, these guys are talking in the post game about how it's unfair and they're being targeted by the officials. I'm sorry. Does that include the false starts? Is it new this year that you're not allowed to leave before the snap of the football?
Right.
On an offensive line that's just disjointed and messy.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a point where you're using Cade Stover to block Jonathan Greenard, mostly so you can turn your protection back towards the interior offensive line, which is so awful. And they had no answers versus the Vikings defense. And you've got to keep... I mean, they're using seven-man protection where, like, only three of the guys know how to actually pass block.
Yeah.
You might as well just spread it out and go air raid on them and try to do something that way.
I think, the two most frustrating things from a team standpoint, we'll get to individuals here in a second.
Yeah.
Because, boy, is Laremy Tunsil taking some, and rightfully so, from Texan fans everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as the team thing goes, to me, the two most frustrating things, one... That game yesterday, we said it after the Bears game on Sunday night. If they play this way against Minnesota, they will get beaten. They will get their skulls thumped.
Yeah.
They played that way against Minnesota, and they got the... Like, you could have seen this one coming. Don't commit a dozen penalties. You know, like...
Yeah, they got one shy. They were only 11 this
week. Oh, is it 11?
One was declined.
Oh,
Laremy Tunsil's illegal formation.
Declined.
That when they had four straight penalties... When they knocked themselves out of field goal position with four straight penalties, Laremy was declined.
That's
at the
right.
end there.
Okay. Yeah. So it was only 11, yeah. So that's frustrating, number one, is that, hey, man, like, the warning signs were all there, and you did nothing about it.
Yeah.
You did nothing about it. Number two, This is supposed to be an explosive offense. I was told that the acquisition of Stephon Diggs and the continuity that was kept in the coaching staff, the acquisition, I know Joe Mixon didn't play yesterday, but Diggs in particular, CJ in year two, and through three games, I keep hearing about, well, teams are playing these two high safeties again. You know, teams are playing two high safeties against everybody these days.
Right.
Where is the counterpunch?
Where's the, right, where is the running the football?
Are we just going to sit here and complain about how they're getting covered and how they're getting treated scheme-wise?
If the defense is allowing you, and the Vikings did this less so than in the first two games, but if the defense is allowing you to run the ball, basically, then just go ahead and run the ball. But they're lost. They're lost in a lot of ways. This is on Bobby Slowick ultimately, because that offensive line is by far the weak link on this football team right now. I'm trying to think of a position group. Offensive line. And it's the lowest common denominator on this offense actually being any good. It is true. Look, it's one thing to be limited a little bit in your offense, even though you have these three wide receivers. But now, after three games, in which two of them, you really haven't done much offensively at all, you got to look at it and say, look, there aren't any excuses. You've got Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, and Nico Collins out there. And yes, they spread it around a little bit yesterday. They got some more guys involved. But it was just a complete non-performance.
Yeah, they were down double digits like that.
And even when things, I mean, three of the first six series were upended by offensive penalties.
Yes.
Offensive line penalties.
Yep.
And or just, I mean,
Laramie Tunsil. They were upended by Laramie Tunsil.
And that's the thing. This has been a consistent theme with Laramie Tunsil through his career, where, great, you're a great pass blocker, but on these critical drives, you kill drives with your false starts. Like, you easily, it's as good as giving up a sack. You go from 3rd-and-3 to 3rd-and-8. You do all these things that negate the good things you do. And then in the run game, I mean, there's just no, I just worry the guys, like, I think, like, young guys like Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green can develop into some good players in the NFL, and yet the example they have set for them is these guys that want to be, like, diva offensive tackles. It's just the strangest
thing. And they've been rewarded for it.
Yeah, they've been heavily rewarded for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the tricky part.
Like, who are your most swarm-like? At any point this season, are Laramie Tunsil or Titus Howard going to be in the circle of swarm?
Oh, God, no.
I highly doubt it.
It's a long season. But they're not even close right now.
And there's a thing, too. You know, it's like sometimes as a defense, you go up against certain offensive lines where, you know, as a defensive player, you're never intimidated by an offensive line. But you know when you're going into a game where you're like, oh, it's going to be a hard hat week.
It's going to be a long day.
I got to be ready to go. I'm going to be battling today. And as good as Laramie Tunsil is in pass protection, I can't imagine there's a single guy out there who's like, oh, we're in for a bloodbath this week.
Yeah.
You know, like, we better be ready. Yeah, screw this guy. I'm going to. It's finesse. It's a finesse. This is an offensive line that wants to be finesse, and yet they're not good at the finesse either. It's like some rich kid that's taken fencing lessons his whole life, and then all of a sudden he thinks he's going to show up in a bar room, and then he gets hit upside the head
with his little sword.
Yes, with his little foil. Hold on, foil. Good sir. Yeah. Yes, I have a foil, and then he gets cracked upside the head with a 40.
Let's hear from C.J. Stroud. This was C.J. As long as we're talking about the offensive line, here was C.J. Stroud saying, we can't be in third and long all the time.
No.
Can't live on third and long, especially against a defense like theirs. They cause a lot of issues on third and long. You have to give yourself a chance, and, you know, you keep shooting yourselves in the foot and just moving backwards. You know, you're not playing complimentary football even for yourself. So, you know, I don't know exactly. I can't just tell you right now what the issues are up there. Has to be conversation, you know, away from, you know, the game and just meetings and just seeing what, you know, what we can do to be better when, you know, it's loud and, you know, how intentional we have to be at practice and things like that, just to get those things fixed. Because, I mean, we're moving the ball. It's just, you know, you're kicking yourself out the red zone and kicking opportunities, and, you know, and it's hard to live on third and plus 10. So,
see, it wasn't CJ's best day. I'll preface what I'm about to say by saying that it was not CJ's best day. That was not CJ Stroud's fault yesterday, I don't think. Like, he could have played better for sure. These were the third downs, their first nine third downs. You ready for this, Seth? 3rd-and-7, 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-11, a 3rd-and-7 that went to 3rd-and-12, thanks to Laramie Tunsil. Another 3rd-and-12, a 3rd-and-4, that went to 3rd and 9, 3rd and 14, and 3rd and 19 because of 3 false start penalties on 3 different players.
Yeah.
A 3rd and 10 that went to 3rd and 15 because of Laremy Tunsil.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, the 2 that went just 1 5-yard penalty,
yeah,
they got first downs on the actual plays for both of those. Like Xavier Hutchinson had a 16-yard catch,
right, right,
Tank Dell had a 17-yard catch. So it wasn't the 5 yards.
Yeah.
It was the 17 that you would have gotten to get the first down. So that was just in the first half. They averaged 3rd and 12. The first 2 third downs of the second half, 3rd and 16, 3rd and 11. The best they had was 3rd and 7, and that was on their very first third down. Other than that, it was 3rd and double digits literally every single time.
Yeah. It's and part of it too is when you watch and you see and you wonder, all right, with this defense, where the defense, if you guys can envision in your mind just the how it looks with the Vikings and a lot of defenses right now. Everybody's at the line of scrimmage at the snap. And then immediately everybody, all these linebackers will bail out. There's opportunities there. And we saw, even on that first, the second drive, where he hits, CJ hits Stephon Diggs. And like, it's just, but it's work. Like, you got to find those soft spots. As the linebackers are dropping back into their spots, there are openings there. But if you want to try to utilize a bunch of quick guys out on routes, the problem is you've got 2 tight ends in the game. They're both blocking before they leave on routes. The running back has to block before he leaves on a route because the offensive line cannot be trusted to do a damn thing. A damn thing. Whether it's physically blocking one-on-one or picking up the blitz or handling something as simple as, oh, the defensive line shifted right before the snap. They can't be trusted. And it's the one funky gear in the machinery that's screwing everything up right now. And that's on Bobby Slowick. That's on Chris Strausser. And frankly, honestly, when we listened to Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard both after the game talk about how, apparently they're emphasizing this illegal formation this year.
Laremy Tunsil's exact quote from Aaron Wilson on the illegal formation. You ready?
Yeah.
They tried to make an example out of us. The first 2 weeks we lined up the same with no problem. Now it's a problem. I feel like somebody told them to make an example. Laramie's got to stop with the victim stuff.
Yeah, no, he's the most penalized offensive lineman in the league.
He's been doing this for 4 years now.
Yeah, the victimhood is not going to play.
No,
it's like an 8-time felon being like, well, they were looking for it out of me. I just, you know, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I just you murder 8 people and all of a sudden they're on watch for a 9.
Apparently that's a point of emphasis with the police.
And it was a point of emphasis from week 1.
Yeah.
And it is as simple.
Just watch football.
All the offensive tackle has to do is check. But that's where it's on Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach.
Yep.
I'll tell you another thing. Juice Scruggs and his stupid head bob. Yeah, that should have been flagged.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, when they go to silent count and the center lifts his head up, you're not allowed to jerk it back up because it's like simulating it's trying to,
like, you're getting out of your stance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, on 1, you lift your head up, on 2. And he did the very same thing the next play.
Yeah.
These guys are either not accepting the coaching or they're not even being told or coached about this stuff. It's bad, man. That's on Slowick. That's on Strausser. That's on certainly the veteran leadership.
Yep. We'll get to more Texans. I thought CJ had some good perspective after the game that we'll get to. It was bad all the way around here in Houston yesterday. It wasn't just the Texans. We'll get to the Astros as well. We'll get to some headlines later. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. It's a Reaction Monday. Stay there.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
We'll circle back to the Texans in just a minute. CJ Stroud with some perspective after the game. We'll run it through the filter here and see if it matches up with how we're feeling about this team. But bad day yesterday for the Texans. Bad, really bad day for the offensive line. 34-7. They lose to the Minnesota Vikings. Bad day for the Astros, too. Bullpen implosion in the 9th inning leads to a 9-8 loss to the Los Angeles Angels. The worst news, though, is Yordan Alvarez hurt himself sliding into second base. No contact or anything. He didn't run into anybody. He just slid into second base, stretching a single to a double. Joe Espada after the game on Yordan Alvarez.
Pretty sore right knee contusion, and we are getting some imaging done right now, so we won't find out anything, you know, at least for next hour. But, you know, not what I wanted to see, you know, when I run out there. And it's pretty sore just when he slid and just his weight on the knee, just the way he landed. So hopefully we get some good news here.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I sure do hope so. Yeah. I have a contusion. What could go wrong with contusion?
There's no way it could turn into a 3-month shin breakage.
Yeah, I fully expect at some point 3 weeks from now they're going to say, well, it turns out that actually every leg bone was broken. We just couldn't see it with the imaging. We've got these MRI machines that we got from Soviet Russia in 1975.
You think we're being snarky? This is where this team has put us when it comes to injuries.
Yes,
this is their fault.
Jordan's contusion is not as simple
contusion.
As those days of me saying, "Oh, a contusion." That's just fancy lingo for a bruise. I don't know.
No.
I don't know so much anymore.
It's fancy lingo for a hairline fracture for Kyle Tucker.
They put three syllables in it for a reason.
You know that this lines up directly with what I've been begging Jordan to not do.
Yeah, you don't want him to slide.
I don't want him to slide.
What do you do? You can't play baseball without ever sliding.
Sure you can.
Yeah.
Just don't slide.
Oh, yeah. Just try to stop really fast on two
just
feet
stay on
and
first.
Collide into people.
How about just stay on first?
All right. No. No. No, he's just got that's a hazard of the game of baseball.
It's really hazardous with him. Anyways.
He does have that. He has that feel of a 3500 heavy duty diesel just going down the highway at 90 miles an hour when he's running. And you're like, okay, it's fine. Wow, it can move along really well until a little bunny rabbit hops out in front of it.
Yeah.
And then you got to swerve.
Well,
it doesn't quite have the alacrity that you hope
that
for.
That was saying alacrity. That's a good word. We didn't get to watch the Astros game yesterday because we were watching the Texans game up here. We were just getting push notifications. At least I wasn't watching the Astros game. But I got the push notification from several people who were at the game or, reporters or whatnot, where you go, okay, Jordan Alvarez is leaving the game after sliding into second base. I just assumed that he was sliding into second base and ran into another human being.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was just sliding into second base and nobody was within 12 feet of the bag.
It was a superfluous slide. Right, but again, that should be no big deal. You got to do that 20 times in practice, putting on your sliding pants there.
All right. All right. Well, Jake Myers is batting second in the playoffs.
This is who Jordan is. I mean, this is not, I just can't tell a guy not to do the normal everyday baseball activities because you're built a certain way.
They just need to win one game against Seattle, and they'll clinch the division. Here's Alex Bregman saying, we're in a pretty good spot right now.
I think we keep focusing on taking it one day at a time, continue to play good baseball. I thought we played well, showed a lot of I thought our offense was really good today. Just being able to bounce back inning after inning. And, I thought it was a good series all the way around. I thought our pitchers threw the ball really well all series long.
They're going to be the 3 seed, it looks like. They're 4.5 games back of Cleveland right now for the 2nd seed. As we pointed out, they just need to win one game against Seattle. They'll clinch the magic number's 2.
But that's not always the simplest thing to do. They had a simple, easy way in last year, too. And remember, it got kind of dicey.
Mm-hmm.
They needed the help of the Rangers. So Josh Hader was the biggest disappointment yesterday, obviously. Gave up, was it 4 earned runs?
4 earned runs,
I went through, I just wanted to check just to be sure and on Josh Hader's playoff performance. I hadn't looked at it in a while. He's been in 16 postseason games. He's only given up earned runs in 2 of those appearances.
Okay.
So it's not like you have to worry about Josh Hader being some guy that can't handle the pressure or crunch time or
anything
like that.
We're used to good closers. I mean, Ryan Presley was a great postseason closer for the Astros. So yeah, we're used to that. That's the buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
So one game, win 1 out of 3. They've got their 3 best starters going. They got Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, Yusei Kikuchi. Like if we get to Thursday and the Astros haven't clinched the division, there's going to be a major 5-alarm fire going on.
It'll be a rough week in Houston.
It'll be
a rough week in Houston.
Between that and the Texans, yes.
And then the Texans just without, if Joe Mixon's not healthy, I might just not come to the game next week. I think that's one area they missed Joe Mixon yesterday was in pass protection, too. That first holding call on Kate Stover. I mean, Cam Akers had every opportunity to give a little bit of a chip.
Yeah.
But he squeezed through that tiny hole like it was a run play or something. Instead of just making any one bit of an effort to help out Cade Stover, he just...
I haven't seen snap counts yet. To see how many snaps British Brooks got?
Yeah.
He had one really good, on Cam Akers' really only good run of the day, that 9-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
British Brooks had a nice block out of the fullback position on that play. So yeah, I gotta go check that out.
I would say put as many people on the field who actually enjoy physical contact as possible.
Well, then they're gonna have to revamp the offensive line. It would appear.
I want Broker to be the starting left tackle. You know, give me somebody that'll at least fight people out. Give me a holding penalty instead of a false start. Can I get that?
Yes.
An aggressive penalty.
Something involving
some
contact.
Something that doesn't involve peeing down your leg because it's loud.
Yeah.
It was really, I don't think you guys understand. It was really loud in there. It was like crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see that? You hear that horn?
It was loud.
That horn was blowing.
They're saying skull.
Yeah, it was a skull. I didn't even know what that was all about.
Skull. And I just had to move.
I gotta be honest with you. I didn't think it was a healthy work environment. I just thought the decibel level that's frankly, like, can OSHA not get involved in this?
Right, OSHA.
Of course I jumped off sides. I was terrified.
Here's C.J. Stroud shifting gears. The Astros back at it tonight. Hunter Brown on the mound against the Seattle Mariners. Here's C.J. Stroud asked if this can be a game that they'll look back at as a turning point for them.
100% agree. I mean, I've dealt with games like this before where it's like, man, like, we look terrible. We like to, but that's not the truth. You know, they kicked our butts today. They are a great team, and they will continue to be doing great things. But we know what we are, and that's not what we put on the field today. Got a lot of respect for those guys over there. But like Steph said, I mean, this is just the beginning. It's week three. It's no time to, you know, point the finger or, you know, or separate. It's only time to come together. That's all. The most thing that matters, we stay together. We don't care about the outside noise. We know everybody's probably going to turn their back on us. We know our fans are going to stay loyal. So, you know, it is what it is. We know what we're going to be, and we're going to, you know, continue to go through the lumps that everybody goes through during the year at some point, and we're glad it's happening now.
As you said, like Seth said, you got to stick together stick together right now. I like that Stephon Diggs was the one that delivered that message.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stephon Diggs also did, you know, was a lot more active yesterday. But, man, every single reception was so hard fought for all those guys yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too political here, but I'll quote a unanimously regarded as a great American president, Jeff Van Gundy, who once said, don't ignore in victory what you would not ignore in defeat. I think the Texans ignored a lot of stuff in victory the last couple weeks. I think that I'm glad they got punched and contused in the shins in week three instead of in week six or something, because they got away with a lot of nonsense and a lot of sloppiness in the first 2 weeks that if they'd been facing a better quarterback or a better team, they wouldn't have gotten away with. You know, they were lucky in some respects to get away with it in the first two games. So maybe this is a wake-up call that they need. We can set aside our podcasts. We can set aside our GQ. We can set aside our appointments with our personal jeweler. Whatever things that might plague the offensive line and others right now, you can say, oh, yeah, we sucked. Yep. Nope, that's what happens when we play that way. We sucked.
Well, and take it personally.
Yeah,
personally. Take it personally. That's the thing I think that's frustrating for me, for Texan fans, anybody who watches this team. It feels like, and I'll hone in on Laremy Tunsil again, because he's the leader of this, he's the elected leader of this offensive line,
yeah.
Elected by his teammates as a captain of this team. It feels like Laremy Tunsil takes Pro Football Focus rankings more personally than he does ass kickings like yesterday.
Right. It's never his fault.
Right.
It's never his fault. Well, you want your leaders to be sure that they're people there, that you set an example of it never being their fault. And that,
you want me to read the other Laremy Tunsil quote?
Yeah.
I read the illegal formation one in the open.
Yeah.
I'll read the other one.
Yeah, like he completely, speak nothing of the false starts, but sure, the illegal formation.
Well, here's the quote on the false starts.
Okay.
Here's Laremy Tunsil.
A great one. This is great.
False starts, I want people to understand we all have to be on the same communication. I'll take accountability because they're calling my name, but it takes all of us.
Right. So it's. So the offensive linemen are trying to time it so that they're leaving as the ball is being snapped, if not a little bit before. You can get away with a little bit before.
Yeah.
The problem is this. Laremy Tunsil has had this problem through multiple different centers.
Yes.
And every year the excuse is the same. It's that, oh no, it's got to be the center or somehow. I don't know if he's rhythmically challenged. I haven't seen him dance or anything, but dude, you're like the guy that's on his ninth wife and is like, all these bitches be crazy. Excuse my language, everything. Like, no, at some point, take some accountability.
Mm-hmm.
If it's happening with multiple different centers and it's not an issue for the other guys on the offensive line, it's a Laremy Tunsil issue.
Correct.
It's especially frustrating because Laremy Tunsil is one of the most athletic offensive tackles in the league. Of all the guys who need like a little bit of just extra help to time the snap count perfectly, he's the last guy who actually needs that extra help. And it's just, it's willfully harming the offense at this point. It's not even a matter of, you're willfully doing harm to them, you know, brazenly, and then asking for not even forgiveness, but just saying it's not your fault. I cannot imagine that D'Amico is cool with this. I cannot imagine D'Amico is cool with the way Laremy Tunsil operates. Never practices. Super vet. Remember CJ called him super vet? Never does anything more than he has to or anything. He's 30 years old. He's been operating like super vet since he was 27. Like, that's a status you get when you're 32, 33 or something. It's such a bad example.
Yeah. Text message.
Think of the children.
Text message. I'm really worried that Tunsil and Titus are not going to be held accountable at all, and this is just going to continue. Here's another text message. This is for you. Seth, how does a new-ish head coach like D'Amico get his message through to his diva offensive line player, Laremy Tunsil?
I was thinking about that at halftime. I mean, do you bench him? I mean, do you really go out there with...
Four penalties in the first half.
Yeah, because you've got...
And none of them came at a good time.
Blake Fisher or Nick Broeker are your next options, so you got to make that... You got to make that devil's compromise between, well, I really would prefer CJ not to leave this game with fewer internal organs than he arrived with, but I also, we can't operate this way. We can't get to where we want to go. I mean, it's just brazen at this point. It's brazen. Yeah. The league leader in penalties last year had 20 penalties.
It was Juwan Taylor.
Juwan Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, plays for a good football team. They managed to get by with the way he operates and everything. Laremy Tunsil right now has 10 penalties.
Three games. So he's on pace for about 55 penalties.
He's on pace for, yeah.
Oh,
but it's not his fault. It's just the league.
I mean,
the league happens to be targeting the guy that happens to have gotten penalized for false starts more than anybody else since 2018.
Totally. No, that's the shame of the whole thing.
Right.
He's going to get 55 penalties this year, and it's not even his fault.
Basically, a martyr is what he is.
It's a good thing he got paid, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
it's good that he got paid.
I can't wait for the next side-eye emoji when somebody gets paid.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. Text message, the Tunsil free pass is over, and don't say he didn't have one. He did. You guys gave it to him. Okay, we gave him a free pass.
We gave it to him. Like, honestly, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
Like, what are you even talking about?
Right.
Okay, the free pass is over. Don't deny that he had one. I've openly and like
said
I've openly
years.
Said that he's had a not a free pass, but that he gets away with it partly because he's so good. But it's uncomfortable. Like, I honestly have not felt ever since D'Amico came to this team, I haven't been comfortable with the fact that Laremy Tunsil is supposed to be one of your team leaders, and he's the least swarm-like good player on the team.
Yes.
There's nothing about him and the way he operates that fits in step with the way D'Amico operates.
Agreed.
It's just... And you know the real tragedy of it all is... It does. It goes back to Bill O'Brien. Trent Williams was out there. Could have traded a third-round pick for Trent Williams. Instead, they chose to go with two first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil. And it's astounding, man.
All right.
If he would just take responsibility for it, at least.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday. Texans lose 34-7 to the Minnesota Vikings. Up next, headlines.
I love the notion that somehow, the reason that Laremy Tunsil is still the starting left tackle is because D'Amico is listening to Payne and Pendergast, and they gave him a free pass. So
we've been giving him a free pass.
That's over now, Buster.
Yeah,
that's over now, Buster.
Yeah, yeah. No, the free pass is gone now.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to headlines. Texans lose yesterday. Astros lose around the NFL. There were some crazy results yesterday that we're going to get into in headlines. We'll get you all up to speed coming up next.
And Pendergast with today's headlines.
Darnold takes the snap on third and goal. Looking. He's got time. Now pocket collapsing. Darnold scrambling out to the left. Squares up. Throws. Caught. Touchdown. No problem for Justin Jefferson. Able to find some real estate as Darnold bought time. And the Vikings get an early TD.
Well, yeah. He had Eric Murray on him on that play.
Yeah, but they also let Sam Darnold get out. Eric Murray was fine if they had just contained Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
I was 100% fine with Eric Murray being on him on that play. They let Sam Darnold get out of the pocket, Justin Jefferson's going to get open at some point. That's the pass rush wasn't what it needed to be. And like you're also at the point now where you can talk all you want about how guys are getting chipped and everything. Like, that's why guys get paid as big time pass rushers. You get paid to beat getting chipped and all of that.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, contain Sam Darnold, who can run. I think the Texans defense was racist yesterday. I think they they looked at Sam Darnold and they're like, no way, this goofy ass can run.
And he can.
Despite what I may have seen on film.
They were stereotyping him?
Yeah, they were stereotyping him.
That's a shame. Yeah. So that was Justin Jefferson. That was a 7-0 lead. That was right after an interception from C.J. Stroud off a tipped ball. I hated that CBS showed the very first graphic of the game, 266 straight attempts without an interception. I'm like, oh, he's for sure throwing an interception now.
At least he threw one later on that was his fault.
That was his fault.
You know, at least he has one that he can feel from. I feel like I wanted everybody on the field to have something they can learn from.
Jason, well, you got your wish.
Jason Bristol last night asked me if the team needs to flush this and, you know, move on to Jacksonville. I would say no. I hope they don't flush it. I hope they feel the sting of how bad their performance was. The offensive line, especially. We talk too much about the penalties. Honestly, there are high school offensive line coaches watching the way that these guys move with their footwork and everything that have got to be like, oh my God, I would not allow this.
It's that bad, huh?
It's bad. Yeah, it's just sloppy and disjointed. And I mean, Titus is out there. It looks like Yordan Alvarez might as well be out there, like completely erect and just moving your feet around and everything. Like, I feel like Titus could move straight ahead pretty well.
Yeah.
But he's the first play, that Cade Stover holding call. I mean, Titus like almost knocks over Shaq Mason, then turns back out to handle the blitzer. The blitzer destroys Titus right back into the lap of the quarterback. It's like that all over the offensive line. It's gotten worse since week one. It's really amazing. There's certain things, when you face a team like the Vikings, that defense is really good, and it's really hard to play against mentally. But if you play with good fundamentals, at least you have a chance. The Texans are doing all these things that don't even give them a chance because their fundamentals are so flawed. So I'm the last person usually to just say, fire this guy, fire that guy. At this point, there's no... If anybody gets fired on the offensive line, be it coach or player or anybody else, it's totally justifiable at this point.
Well,
if they don't fix what's going on right now.
And they're so pot committed to this group. They've invested a lot in this group.
They've given a lot of money to offensive linemen that don't actually look like they give a damn about doing their job properly.
Use high picks on guys? Yeah. It's a shame. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the pass coverage. You just heard Justin Jefferson score the first touchdown of the game. Here's D'Amico Ryans assessing the pass coverage against Sam Darnold.
With the coverage, I mean, we have to make plays. We're in position. We have to make plays at the end of the day. That's what it comes down to. I mean, in the red zone there, we got them. Third down, a couple times there in the red zone, and we did not make the play. So that will never change in this league. Like, playmakers have to step up and make plays.
Yeah, and some of this is, I was trying to, my All-22 wouldn't load this morning. I appreciate that it was up already, but... I think the strategy of just letting Justin Jefferson explore the space, just go ahead and say, we'll play some zone and just see if you can find a spot for yourself, Justin Jefferson, in the first half. I mean, he was magnanimous enough to drop a couple in the second half to make it look
nice
like
that. That was nice of him to do, I thought.
It was on the stat sheet you were able to say, like, oh, look, they limited him in the second half. Well, he dropped two easy ones where he was wide open. I think some of that's on play calling. That's on game plan by D'Amico and Matt Burke. And then also just on the defensive backs themselves, that you got to come up and challenge this dude. Turn it into something. Don't just let him get 10 yards of unfettered freedom to get into your routes every single snap.
So the Texans lose 34-7. Bad day for the Astros, too. They cough up a ninth inning lead. Josh Hader gives up four runs in the ninth. They lose to the Angels 9-8. The final score of that game. The big news coming out of this game, a couple things. One, Yordan Alvarez left with what's being called a knee contusion. We'll find out more about the severity of that today, I would imagine, seeing as the Astros play the Mariners. That's the other bit of news, is that the Astros is still yet to clinch the AL West. One win over the Mariners in the next three games, and they've got Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, and Yusei Kikuchi, their three best starting pitchers, going in these games. So hopefully by Wednesday they've got this thing wrapped up. If not, then for sure we will be discussing how the sky is falling on Thursday when we come in.
This might make me feel a little bit better. Where exactly are the Twins right now?
I know they're out of the playoffs.
They're 100% out for sure. Okay.
By one game.
I just wanted to be sure. Okay.
By one game.
All right. So that makes you feel a little bit better, I guess, at least, that something in Minnesota isn't going well for them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're miserable about something up there.
I didn't know. It was weird. It was funny. I wasn't really getting angry at any Vikings fans. It was just strange and weird that they were like, you guys never want to give us credit. Give us credit now. I'm like, I rarely talk or think about the Vikings. What the hell are you even talking about? Yeah, I don't think about you.
Right.
Good job.
You're in the NFC.
Good job. I think it's an awesome story if Sam Darnold works out, and I think that defense is scary as hell. Honestly, I can see why Tua was so intimidated by Brian Flores. I don't think Brian Flores can't help
it. He's intense.
He intimidates quarterbacks,
and I
think he couldn't help it with Tua. I think it was just a matter of, okay, that's the way he's wired is to intimidate quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Poor Tua.
Whatever
CJ was going through yesterday, Tua had to go through every day.
You see, we may get a Tim Boyle start on Sunday now. Tim Boyle's a Dolphin, and Skylar Thompson went out with a chest injury.
Mm.
Tim Boyle was in that Dolphin-Seattle game at the end of the game. Texans legend, Tim Boyle.
I think about the Dolphins more than I think about the Vikings, and yet I can't, I don't get excited about them falling apart. I suppose. I don't know why.
Because that's what they do every year.
Yeah.
So, speaking of other games around the NFL, Cowboys lose yesterday to the Ravens, 28-25. Game was not as close as the final score would indicate. It was 28-6 in the fourth quarter, and the Cowboys put a flurry on them to make it a close game. The Titans lose to the Green Bay Packers, 30-14. The Green Bay Packers with Malik Willis at quarterback. Nice revenge game for Malik Willis in Tennessee yesterday.
Yeah.
That was big.
It's not good in Tennessee right now. Will Levis with
another pick six.
Well, and the other thing, too, Will Levis, you know, I'm just amazed at the hits that he takes that he doesn't need to take. He has no concept of whether or not a play is going to work out for him, so he just goes for it. Like, he was 2 yards shy of the first down marker, and he thought he was going to leap for it, which is great. You know, for glory and whatnot, and the team, but he didn't even get off the ground. He got snubbed. He's so stupid. He's so dumb.
He's dumb.
I think about the Titans a lot.
You do?
Yeah. Since we're talking, you know, the hierarchy of teams that I think about.
Yeah.
I think about I never think about the Vikings. I think about the Titans a lot.
Do you think about the Colts? They won yesterday.
Yeah, I know. It disappointed me. It wasn't. Anthony Richardson has yet to throw for better than 50% completion.
He was right at 50% yesterday.
Just like he was last week.
To be fair.
I believe he finished exactly at 50% last week,
I think
too.
He did, too. Yeah.
One of these days, he's going to do it, man.
He was 9 of 19 against the Texans. Just shy of 50%.
He's going to complete over 50% of his passes in 2024 at some point this season.
I was watching a video yesterday, and they're like, this is what you get with Anthony Richardson, and he threw, like, just a dime.
Like
a deep ball, like he did to Alec Pierce in the Texans game. And then, however many plays later, he throws an interception inside the 5-yard line.
He's like one of those, you know, in a comedy, there is always some moment, there's some moment where, like, the dumbest cast member all of a sudden comes up with something brilliant, like where they just go into another zone. That's Anthony Richardson.
Yes.
Just once, he's the goofy stoner that all of a sudden is like, well, according to Occam's razor, we should do this or something, you know?
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. If you head to T-Mobile.com, get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro.
Ooh.
There you go. Yeah.
You're up to 16 already?
16. I went and got the 15 like a month ago, and now they're up to 16. They warned me when I went to the Apple store.
It's like they do it every year.
Yeah. They warned me. They're like, sir, we have the 16 coming out soon. I'm like, well, I need this for the camera because I'm going to start doing like a lot of video stuff. Yeah. Like, you don't need to worry about that then. Go ahead and get the 15.
It's kind of weird, isn't it, that it's only been 16 years that the smartphone has been in our life to a large degree.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, you didn't really get a smartphone until maybe like a few years after that.
Right.
And now I can barely envision a time when I would have to go pick somebody up at the airport and not really have a clue what
get into a game.
Because even if you had to call somebody with your phone at the airport with a cell phone, an old school cell phone, it was just way dicier than doing it with a smartphone.
All right, this might be this player might be catching the most heat of any non-quarterback that I've seen since covering the team here at Sports Radio 610. I'm talking about the Houston Texans. And we will go through yesterday why exactly that is happening right now. Deservedly so. That is next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I think the thing that probably has Texan fans the most nervous right now is that the narrative surrounding the first two games was, well, they played their B-minus game, and they still were able to come away with wins in those games. And I don't think that was an unfair take, those first two games. They, like, based on what in our head the best is for this team, they didn't do that. But they won the games, and that's good. Now, they're doing the same things. They go into the home of a good team, Minnesota, and they get destroyed. And so, now, again, it's three games in. It's a 17-game season. It's a long season. But this is the only evidence we have to go off of so far. Is this who they are?
Right, right. Somebody yesterday told me on X, they said, the Texans are ass. They can only beat bad teams, not good ones. And I'm like, well, I don't know. The hierarchy doesn't quite line up there. I feel like ass is the teams that the Texans just beat.
Right.
So but they just got killed by a good team. So they're somewhere between ass and the good teams.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people have pointed out that, well, look, the Vikings, you know, they handled the 49ers the week before, too. I would disagree. The 49ers were actually able to move the ball. They were able to run the ball really well without Christian McCaffrey in the game. They were running at 5 yards a clip with their backup running back there. But it was not like, it was not comfortable for the 49ers, but it didn't look like whatever the hell that was yesterday.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, so the Texans are very much still, if I have to put them in the hierarchy, all right, how much different are they than the team that went to Baltimore last year and looked like
they just flat out could not
compete against one of the better teams in the NFL? Yeah. That's what they looked like yesterday.
Yeah.
Is they just flat out couldn't do it. You can blame it on penalties or what have you. That's what tends to happen when you're outmatched, is you start doing stupid stuff, you know? So, well, you got to throw sand in the bully's eyes because you're outmatched.
They were, you know, we look at those power rankings every Tuesday. They were a top five team in the eyes of a lot of the national experts following their 2-0 start. You know, and I think those experts were looking at it the same way we were, which is, okay, they haven't even played that well. Here's what, in my mind, I think they could be. And, boy, if they get to that, that's definitely a top-five team.
Yeah.
Well, now here's evidence that they're not a top-five team. And the scary thing about this is, I don't think they become a top-five team unless the offensive line gets better.
And the thing with the offensive line, and this is where I get nervous about it, is, and you know as I do, I like to send my little clips out to various offensive linemen that I've played with. It is, to them, it just feels like so much of the last however many years of them being kind of shocked at how fundamentally unsound some of the good players or the veteran players on the offensive line are.
Highly paid players.
Yeah, I don't care how good you are, you're supposed to be. When you're turning your hips and just getting yourself out of position and catching blocks, you're not a good offensive lineman.
No.
And Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, all right, maybe he's not the guy. Problem is, it's week three of the regular season, and this is the way the offensive line is playing. If you want to genuinely capitalize on all the talent you have on that offense, and I don't care who's at running back, then it's really hard to go far with the offensive line playing the way they are.
They are, yep, and they had illegal formation penalties yesterday. They had false starts yesterday. Happened at the worst possible times. We'll get into the day that Laremy Tunsil... I say the day that Laremy Tunsil had. It was really just one quarter worth of football. And he almost personally torpedoed the Texans' chances at least getting momentum going in the game. I'm not going to say he cost them the game. They lost 34-7.
For a guy who's been one of the most penalized offensive linemen in the league over these last several years, it was kind of the... It was like the cherry on top,
yes,
I think, of a really bad Sunday.
Well, the illegal formation calls, and again, these calls are because the tackles are lining up too far off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They're trying
to
get an angle on the edge rushers.
Yeah.
And it's been a point of emphasis for the league since the season opener on Thursday Night Football in Week 1 between the Ravens and the Chiefs. All you had to do was watch that game, and you could see, oh, okay, well, they're calling this a little closer this year. While you're on the field, you can check with the referee to see how you're lined up.
Just like a receiver does.
Correct.
And that's largely what offensive linemen have realized if they've been paying attention.
So here was Laremy Tunsil. I'll read Laremy Tunsil's answer about this thing, and we'll play Titus Howard audio about this. But the lack of accountability is infuriating with these two in particular on this. Here's Laremy Tunsil on the illegal formation calls. He said, quote, "They tried to make an example out of us. The first 2 weeks, we lined up the same with no problem. Now it's a problem. I feel like somebody told them to make an example out of us. Got to call it the same on both sides." Think of how silly that is. Think of how stupid that sounds. I feel like somebody told them, I'm guessing the league or the officials, to make an example out of the Houston Texans.
Right, yes, that's...
Why would they make something going on here? Why would they make an example out of like the 20th best offensive line?
All the other officials around the league for the past several years have been doing calling me for these same things.
Yeah,
not just the illegal alignment, but just the false starts. He's had so many false starts.
I mean, it's
somebody who's a known tax fraud is acting like they came after me. They targeted me. Yeah, dude, you committed white collar crime 3 times already. Like, what am I supposed to cry a river for you?
I feel like somebody told them to make an example out of us.
Yeah,
I mean that is the victim.
It's as simple as and I'll tell you, like, the just the absolute and inane part of it is the way that Titus Howard responded to it too. Yeah. I mean, it just like this is. Try not to flip out when you're listening to this, because remember, as I tell you, all you have to do as the offensive tackle is check with the official before the play.
Right. Here's Titus Howard. This is courtesy of Will Kunkel of Fox 26. Titus Howard on the illegal formation calls.
Yeah, we had one call the first 2 weeks. So, I mean, we lined up the same way we lined up the first 2 weeks tonight, and then it was just some reason tonight they were like, all right, we're just going to call them. But it was just inconsistent.
What were they saying it was?
Saying you got to be up further on the line. I mean, but then again, the next play, you'll be in the same spot, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're good. So, like, I mean, I don't know. That's tough. So, I mean, I just moved up further as I could, and then I looked at the guy, and he was like, are you good? So I was like, I mean, I'm lined up even with the center now. So, I mean, if that's what I got to do. I got to do it. But, I mean, definitely something that – I mean, we're going to have to work with the NFL with, like, because, I mean, it's a problem all around the league, all tackles, having to move up so far in the line of scrimmage. And then it becomes a problem on the road games when you're on silent count and then guys getting out the ball before you get a can because you're so far up. So it's just something we got to work on.
Yeah, you got to play by the rules. It sucks, doesn't it? This is something the defensive linemen have been complaining about forever. And it just – they're enforcing it this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, the defensive linemen have been complaining forever, myself included, about the way that they were starting to let offensive tackles just line up so deep. But this year, for the offensive linemen who have been paying attention, or perhaps if their offensive line coaches had told them to, they've realized, like, okay, yeah, you got to check with the official. You got to be in communication with the official
to
be sure you're aligned
properly. Well, that's very inconvenient, Seth. I don't know if you're a Titus Howard, but he sounded very inconvenient.
I didn't realize we were going to be targeted.
By having to check with the official.
By having to check with the official to be sure that you're legal. And he just gave you the very reason that, yeah, on the road, it does suck. Sorry you got to play by the rules when you're on the road there. Sorry you also, but left out of all of this is the false starts. Like, is it new this year that you're not allowed to leave entirely before the snap count?
Yeah.
Because first Titus Howard, then Juice Scruggs, idiotically, I give him a little bit of a pass because he's a young player. When he bobbed his head, jerked his head up too much, they've been enforcing that for a long time now. I don't give him a pass for doing the exact same thing on the next play, but they didn't call him for it because Laramie Tunsil had a false start.
Right.
An egregiously obvious false start. Yeah. It's just, come on, man. These guys acting like somehow they're the victims here is so infuriating.
Yeah.
And again, when they're as sloppy as they are in actually executing the actual football plays too, there is no comfortable place where you're going to be able to find refuge, man. There's no place where somebody's going to listen to you and say, like, oh, yeah, I know you guys really sucked actually playing football yesterday, but also it seems unfair that they enforced the rules on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Text message, Titus said he checked with the officials. Exactly.
Right.
He checked with the officials. He makes it sound like it's inconvenient to have to check with the officials.
Right.
And they said I was okay. Yeah. Do that every play.
Yeah. It's not rocket science, man. As much as those guys are on social media, I'm surprised they haven't seen former offensive linemen talk about that a lot.
For real.
They've had, they just realized, all right, you got to check with the official.
Yeah, yeah. Here's Laramie Tunsil. This is a quote. This is courtesy of Aaron Wilson. Quote from Laramie Tunsil on the false starts, of which he had two yesterday in the first half. False starts, I want people to understand, we all have to be on the same communication. I'll take accountability because they're calling my name, but it takes all of us.
Yeah, so he's blaming the center on that one. And this is the thing. He's blamed so many centers over the years.
Full accountability, but I didn't do nothing.
He's blamed so many centers. Yeah. So many centers. It's always the center's fault. It's never Laramie Tunsil. All the other offensive linemen seem to be able to figure it out. And yet Laramie Tunsil, who leads the league in false starts since 2018 or whatever the graphic was the other day, Laremy Tunsil has 10 penalties already this season. The league leader had 20 last year. It's the center's fault. All right. Yep, it's not Laremy's fault is the important message there.
I'd rather see Blake Fisher on a trial by fire. This is a text message on a trial by fire than watching someone give away five drives pre-snap.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the other thing too, and I'll go back to Bobby Slowick and the protections he's calling. It, look, sometimes you get a tight end on a defensive end. There's certain plays, and it's not like it should never happen. But these guys are doing this full turn protection where. You're leaving a guy that's played tight end for a little bit over 2 years, Cade Stover, on Jonathan Grenard. I was happy that John Grenard got 3 sacks yesterday. I wish he'd gotten 6. It's the ultimate insult when a team decides, oh yeah, this rookie tight end's going to block
you.
This is what you get.
We'll get to talk about Grenard in about 5 minutes and acknowledge me, so don't worry about that. Grenard had a great game yesterday. Just to contextualize Laremy's day yesterday. And again, I'm not saying that Laremy Tunsil cost the Texans the game. They lost 34-7. What I am saying is that there are certain junctures in the game where there's a fork in the road and you can get back into the game and make it something other than a 34-7 loss.
Yeah.
And it's seemingly at each of those junctures in the first half, Laremy Tunsil was directly involved with sabotaging his own team's chances of doing so. His first false start was probably the least damaging of all of them because it was on first down. It was a first and 10, mm-hmm. made it first and 15. If you're going to get a false start, first and 10 at the Minnesota 45, that's probably the place to do it. It backs you up to midfield. You're not in field goal range yet, whatever. There was 8.5 minutes left in the first quarter. The notable thing about this is a couple of things. One, the Texans had just picked up 2 quick first downs after the first touchdown of the game by the Vikings. So the Texans are getting a little something going to respond to that drive, the short drive by the Vikings after CJ's first interception of the game. Ultimately, this is the drive that would end with Kyme Fairbairn's first missed field goal of the year. The other reason this drive is noteworthy is because Andre Ware lost his mind when Laremy false started. Here's what it sounded like.
Looks like a false start of the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
Well, he got it out of the way early. Laremy Tunsil.
It's every week, though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
He didn't get it out of his system either. No. He'd have 2 false starts in this game.
No, don't worry. Yeah, yeah.
This is when I felt bad for Andy the engineer who was in watching with us.
Yeah.
I think I spit some kolache on him. During that false start. Or no, I think it might have been the second
later
false start.
One. Yeah, yeah.
When I had a mouthful of kolache, and I got as angry as I've been in maybe 7 years.
Yeah.
When Laremy Tunsil had a false start.
Yeah.
And I said it with a mouthful of kolache.
Right.
I appreciate you guys. I know you probably had to stifle a laugh at that one. You guys, I was sitting in the back of the room. You guys were all in the
Seth
front.
Seth was screaming with a full mouth of food.
I was like, like a character in a mob movie. You know, like Fat Seth. You know all those mobsters named Seth?
Yeah.
Fat Seth flipping out with a kolache. You know how they eat kolaches, too.
Oh,
all those
God.
Mobsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sitting in my salami shop in New Jersey.
Eating kolaches named Seth. So that we'll get to that one. So that was the first false start. The other 3 penalties by Laremy Tunsil all came on third down, and they came within a quarter of play. The second penalty was his first illegal formation penalty. That was on a 3rd and 7 at the Texans' 33-yard line. It nullified a 16-yard catch by Xavier Hutchinson that would have gotten the Texans to midfield.
It was a nice catch by Xavier Hutchinson.
Yeah, this is
nice throw, too.
This was with 37 seconds left in the first quarter.
Yeah.
It went from 3rd and 7 to 3rd and 12, nullified that play, and the Texans punted 2 plays later. The false start that had mobster Fat Seth screaming with kolache in his mouth was the 3rd consecutive false start by a Texan. They started out 3rd and 4 at the Minnesota 25. So at the very least, you're looking at this drive going, you know what? Either A, 4-down territory, or B, field goal, you get on the board, it's 14-3 or whatever the score was at the time. At least you get on the board, you get some points. But then Tytus Howard false starts and Juice Scruggs false starts.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's 3rd and 14 and Laremy's like, you guys aren't going to have all the fun. I'm going to false start too. and makes it 3rd and 19. Yeah. And that drove it out of field goal range. That took it from the 35 to the Minnesota 40. That made it a 57-yard field goal.
And that was not a false start where Laramie, like, oh, the timing wasn't right with the center or something. Nope, he was just there off on his own.
Yeah.
Deep into the backfield.
By the way, he committed another penalty on 3rd and 19 that got declined.
Right. It was 4 straight penalties.
Yeah.
It was an illegal formation there on the fourth.
What a joke.
The one they're complaining about. I know people get upset because, like, oh, why are the officials making such a big deal out of this? We heard it from Titus Howard. They don't like having to be up. They don't, the offensive tackles don't like being closer to the line because it makes their jobs harder. Especially when you look like you've gained 27 pounds this year and that you move like, an overweight ballerina who's 30 years past her prime. It's harder. It's harder when you're not in shape to actually get back and play the proper technique when you have to play by the rules.
Yep. Last one by Laramie of the 4 penalties that he got literally within like a quarter worth of play. 3rd and 10, Houston 40, 2.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. And he gets an illegal formation penalty that nullifies a 17-yard catch by Tank Dell that would have given the Texans a 1st and 10 in Minnesota territory, down 14, trying to get points before the half. Instead, the drive ended with, you guessed it, a punt. So if you look at the Texans' drive chart for the first half, it's a lot of punts.
Yeah.
It's an interception, a missed field goal, punt, 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 punt. And all of those punt, other than the missed field goal drive, all the other punting drives were torpedoed by Laramie Tunsil penalties.
Where's Mike Munchak? Is he up in PA right now? He's not coaching this year. I think he retired from coaching.
I think that's
the only option at this point. I'm always careful and hesitant to criticize position coaches, but I know one thing. I played against lines that were coached by Mike Munchak, and they didn't do the crap that the Texans are doing. They were on it. They were cohesive. They used good technique. They were nasty. They were all the things that this offensive line is not right now, and they've got the wrong offensive line coach to fix it. Maybe it's not Chris Strasser's fault, but he ain't fixing the problem. That is a sloppy, disheveled, careless mess. They're slovenly. They don't look like they care about doing the finer things right, whether it's adhering to the rules or using proper technique or knowing what the hell they're doing. It's really bad. It's bad.
Is that who it's going to fall on if this keeps up, Strasser?
At the very least, I mean, that's the one thing you could swap out or do differently.
It's the easiest thing.
Kind of like when your quarterback isn't developing. All right, well, we've got this guy under contract. We got to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe it's his fault. Maybe it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Strasser was up in Indianapolis when they weren't all that happy with the offensive line play as well. We'll all recall that.
Is Laramie playing nervous? I sense some big game anxiety. No,
he's not nervous
enough.
He never gets nervous about a damn thing.
He's not nervous enough. Yeah. Exactly. Can Laramie and Titus play
He's nervous he's not going to be invited to the Whites party in the Hamptons, you know?
Here's a great question. Can Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard play for a good, tough offensive line coach?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Would they spit the bit on that? Like, if they had old Alex Gibbs Sr. come in or something, how would they respond to that?
Right. Boy, Laramie is catching some. Laramie and Slowick are the two that are catching the most.
Ultimately, too, it all comes back to Slowick. Yeah. And I think that it's funny because there's some things about the play calling in the passing game that I can excuse just because they've got limitations on the offensive line and in the run game, and yet that all falls back on Slowick. So I can't give him a pass on that.
Right.
The 49ers the week before ran the ball, even though they weren't good versus the Vikings, they didn't look completely incompetent the way the Texans did yesterday. And they did it without Christian McCaffrey. You know, I'll go, hey, Texans don't have Joe Mixon. All right, great. You know, they did nothing. How many yards did Cam Akers have?
21
yards.
Yeah.
And Cam, I think in pass protection, too, Cam's not the same guy that Joe Mixon is.
No. Hey, reminder, we're giving away some tickets to U of H and Iowa State a little later on this hour. So be listening for that. In the meantime, let's get to Acknowledge Me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances, noteworthy happenings from over the weekend. We do it every Monday at this time. I will say a name. Ben will play the Roman Reigns hotkey, saying "Acknowledge me," and we will acknowledge big performances. I said it earlier this segment. Jonathan Grenard.
Acknowledge. challenge me.
Here was the first of his three sacks yesterday.
Stroud under center. Texans down 7-0. CJ fakes the handoff. In the pocket, he's blasted and sacked. Jonathan Grenard, former Texans making plays everywhere.
Yeah, that was on the heels of Kamu Grugier-Hill getting an interception on the first play of the game. Blake Cashman made a few plays out there. Hell, Shaq Griffin made a few plays out there.
That's right.
Yeah. David Quesenberry got in the fourth quarter because they lost their right tackle.
I had asked in the pregame show who was most likely to get an unsportsmanlike amongst the former Texans.
Yeah.
None of them ever probably felt agitated enough. They were all having such success on the field.
Like, these Texans are being awfully accommodating, actually.
I feel kind of bad for what we're doing to these poor Texans.
Now, should Jonathan Grenard have felt slighted that they kept throwing tight ends at him?
Yes, 100%. Yes, 100%.
Disrespect.
Yeah, disrespect. Some of the stuff the Texans are doing, pass protection, it's like, okay, you're using, it's seven-man pass protection. And yet, the weak link in using seven men to pass protect is you've got your rookie tight end out on Jonathan Grenard. Right. Like, what the hell are you even doing?
Yeah.
What the hell are you even doing? Of course that's going to happen.
Yep.
I don't think anybody really blames Cade Stover in any of that. It's just CJ couldn't even get to the top of his drop on that play.
Yeah. Grenard had three sacks and three TFLs in that game.
Good for him.
That's as good. That is about as good a revenge game as you could draw up right there.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Three sacks, three TFLs, man.
Said he's happy to be where he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, they're 3-0, and he's doing a hell of a job for them.
Swarm? Is he Swarm?
He is Swarm.
He is Swarm. I'd say he's Swarm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, to be fair, Danielle Hunter, who they replaced him with, I think is Swarm also.
It's pretty good. How much did you pay? How old is the guy? There's all that. Where that'll be interesting when you get to the end of the year and how is Jonathan Grenard doing? He was a guy that had never really developed until his final year and wasn't able to stay healthy. So there's all – I don't want to all of a sudden act like that was the worst thing they did to swap those guys out. But I am I'm genuinely happy that Jonathan Grenard is having a good season.
I am too. I mean, this is a Viking, so it's not like they're going to beat the Texans in the division or be in competition for – anybody, any former Texan who's over in the NFC, I'm fine wishing good things for.
I hope, too, the next time – if the Texans' offensive line doesn't get their crap together – I hope they play a clean game where they can't try to use penalties as a red herring for how the league is out to get them. Like, let's not forget the times you guys are getting physically destroyed by lesser athletes or at least guys who are paid a lot less than you.
Yep.
I mean, just catching blocks, letting linebackers drive you into the quarterback's lap. Just do they hate CJ? I don't know. Maybe they hate CJ. Maybe that's the untold story now.
Maybe. Okay, this is going to sound strange because he was not good on Friday, but Justin Verlander.
Acknowledge me!
We're acknowledging Justin Verlander not for his outing on Friday in which he gave up a whole bunch of runs and probably sealed his fate as far as the playoffs go, but that, in all likelihood, Seth, is his last appearance at Minute Maid Park, Justin Verlander, on Friday.
In a regular season game.
Well, we'll see if he's on the playoff roster. I said maybe his last Minute Maid Park appearance. Maybe. And he himself kind of acknowledged, the fans kind of acknowledged it. They gave him a standing ovation coming off of the field. Here was Justin Verlander on the standing ovation.
It meant a lot. It really did. Yeah. That was honestly pretty special to me. You know how these fans know the game. They pay attention. They know I'm out there grinding and, you know, trying to give everything I can. You know, I've worked as hard as humanly possible. You know, trying to bounce back as quick as I can from the injury and get back out there. And, you know, for them to have that ovation after such a difficult day. It touched me.
Yeah.
It did.
So, I mean, at the very least, the two sides, the fans and Verlander, are kind of dancing around knowing that it's a distinct possibility. That's the last time he pitched at Minute Maid Park on Friday. And if that's the case, the book will soon be closed on, in my opinion, the greatest pitcher in Astros history, Justin Verlander. I know he didn't have as many seasons as some, but when he had full seasons, he pitched three full seasons for the Astros, okay? He came in 2017 in September. That's a partial season. He came back here last year, partial season. He basically missed two seasons with Tommy John. The three full seasons he pitched, he was runner-up for the Cy Young and won the Cy Young twice. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah.
You know, So I just wanted to acknowledge Justin Verlander because he said he probably came back a little too fast from the neck injury, but this may be the last that we see of him.
Yeah, there's a lot of, depending on how the Astros season turns out and you know, how deep they go in the playoffs and everything else like that, is that feels, as this franchise has had a lot of turning of the pages with various players through the years, this would feel kind of poignant just because Verlander was the spark of really the beginning of it all.
Absolutely. You know, that trade.
Ignore 2015, yeah. But just, you know, 2017 was the first real year of this extreme playoff run.
His place in Astros history is significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He basically drove Harvey out of town.
He did.
Well.
He did.
He doesn't get enough credit for that.
No, you're right. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was like St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland.
Same exact thing. Mm-hmm. Yusei Kikuchi.
Acknowledge
actual
me.
Pitcher pitching well. Yusei Kikuchi became the first pitcher in Astros history over the weekend, Seth, where the team has gone 9-0 in their first nine starts since joining the team. He's the first pitcher since Max Scherzer in 2021. To do this in all of Major League Baseball,
it's been a lot of fun with Kikuchi.
It has.
It's been really cool. Also, just in terms of how the Astros pitching staff with the coaching staff and analytical staff through with multiple guys this year has reminded us. Oh yeah, okay, they're the same old unit that can just take guys and get the absolute best out of them, which is exciting.
Yeah,
I think more so in Houston, the thing we're spoiled by is that you get all these young pitchers that develop, and in any other franchise or most other franchises, I think you're like, oh well, small sample size, we'll see. In Houston, it tends to stick. Or if it's a veteran player that comes, I mean, like Gerrit Cole and Charlie Morton both came here and flipped their careers around, and it stuck.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's really cool. So you can see it with the young pitchers as well as the veteran guys. And now it's just a question of not to look too far in the future. All right, we get Kikuchi and just want. Maybe a little hometown discount, maybe? Just
yeah,
like you like it here?
Yeah,
you like
man.
You? Yeah.
You like it here? I saw that...
can we work some kind of exotic deal to where like he gets a tax break on having to pay taxes in Japan and everything, too?
Yeah,
I don't
something,
know.
Something.
Get dodgy with it.
Yeah.
Take all those analytics folks and start turn them into tax consultants.
There you go. There you go. Andy Dalton.
Acknowledge
You're
me.
Acknowledging Katie's finest, Andy Dalton. Got the Carolina Panthers off the schneid yesterday in a very impressive win over the Las Vegas Raiders. 26 of 37, 319 yards, and three touchdowns. Getting the Carolina Panthers their first win of the year. Here was Andy Dalton after the game talking to Aditi Kinkwabala, the sideline reporter.
Your wife, your parents, they were losing their minds today. How about you? You've been in a lot of big games. Did you enjoy this one?
Oh, this is so much fun. I mean, when you haven't had it for a while, there's definitely things that you miss, getting to be out there, being in the huddle, being around those guys, and I had a ton of fun today.
All right, I've got one trivia question for you. How many quarterbacks in the National Football League this year have thrown for 300 yards and three passing touchdowns?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
One. His name is Andy Dalton.
Hey, we'll take it. We won the game. That's all that matters.
I'll credit Andy Dalton there because I think when you're asked a question like that, it's obvious that the answer is going to be something like that. But he's like, listen, I'll intentionally fail the IQ test on this one,
right.
And I'll be like, yeah, is it adults? I think it's adults.
Adults?
That's what they call me. That's what I want them to call me. Not a good look for... now, the Panthers reportedly are adamant that they will not trade Bryce Young, despite having received several calls. I think if he does get traded, that's probably something in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, like right now, nobody's going to trade for Bryce Young thinking, like, this is the guy we need to fix our issues now. But it's a play for the future.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I'll tell you what. The one thing, like, if I'm Roger Goodell and I'm watching that interview and I'm hearing, like, the only quarterback to throw for more than 300 yards and three touchdowns 3 weeks into the season, it's one thing that it's Andy Dalton. It's another thing that it's only happened one time in the first 3 weeks of the season.
He's been around long enough. Dude, we do this every year. After 3 weeks of the season, there's all these stories and columns and narratives and 20,000-word Bill Barnwell pieces about how the league has changed. And then halfway through the season, you realize, like, oh, okay, it's not that much different than it's ever been. So I wouldn't think after week three that they're thinking that.
No.
They would prefer there to be more offensive fireworks.
Yeah.
I've been toying with Mel Kiper's idea of banning the cover two a little bit. I kind of like, can you imagine the offensive explosion if all the defensive players had to line up within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage?
Dude.
I think it'd be kind of fun.
Would that be good for the Texans? I think it would be.
I think it would be.
Nico and Tank and Steph Diggs? That would be, yeah. All right, a couple more.
I mean, it would be horrible for their run game. They can't run. Okay. They can't run when the defense has...
Are you telling me the Texans won't be able to run the football?
They have seven guys lined up 30 yards deep.
I take it all back. It would be great for the Texans. Yeah, they can't run the ball anyways.
There would basically be no run game in the NFL.
Patrick Mahomes.
Acknowledge me.
Here's why I'm acknowledging Patrick Mahomes. Not because he engineered another primetime win last night over the Atlanta Falcons. By the way, the Chiefs have won 9 straight games, I believe, and they by a combined 54 points. It's the lowest margin for a 9-game winning streak, something along those lines like that. They've been winning a lot of close games. Here's why I'm acknowledging Patrick Mahomes. In a since-deleted tweet during the Nebraska loss to Illinois on Friday night, Dylan Raiola,
the guy
quarterback
that looks like Pat Mahomes
for Nebraska, not just looks like him, but acts like him.
Right, mimic him.
Yeah. Does all of his little pregame rituals.
Like he's
going to
get hired for shopping mall openings or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The Pat Mahomes impersonator.
Or like football's a Broadway show and he can maybe be his understudy or something like that. Patrick Mahomes tweeted on Friday night, since deleted, "All right, the dude can stop acting like me now," with the side eyes. I'm with you, dude. Dylan Raiola is annoying as hell.
Kind of creepy.
Yes.
Kind of creepy if you're Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, am I going to have to get a restraining order against
this
guy at some point?
Yeah, it's just
I bet Raiola's probably had his NIL reps reach out to Pat Mahomes to see if they could
some collabs.
Yeah. Yes. We could do the same thing. We could dance on TikTok.
Oh.
We could do one of the... Oh, that little boot stance.
And Jackson Mahomes directing the whole thing, Patrick's brother. All right, last one here.
Did my boots stop working?
last one. Pro Football Hall of Fame voters.
Acknowledge
me. Like John McClain and the like. I'm acknowledging you in advance for please doing the right thing and denying Eli Manning Hall of Fame admittance. Please. They announced the ballot last week. There's 167 names on the ballot, you know, and they'll whittle it down to 50 and then 25. And then ultimately there will be 5 guys that go into the Hall of Fame. There's an odds board that came out over the weekend. And I know you saw this, Seth, that has Eli Manning as a 1-5 chance. That's an 83% probability of getting in on the first ballot.
Yeah.
Eli Manning was not a good quarterback.
I know.
He was not a good football player. He won 2 Super Bowls, but
he's Joe Flacco
career.
Times 2.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good quarterback. He just wasn't a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Don't make me open up the back of the football.
Sean, you got to remember, there's very few quarterbacks that just even last.
That's
as
fair.
Long as
he
was
right.
A good
you're
quarterback.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
He just wasn't a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah. He was literally 117 and 117 in his career.
Yeah. Well, but he also
an exact 500.
He played record. In an era where you could suck for the first 3 years, and they would give you time to work it out and everything. He became a good NFL quarterback.
His first 3 years, he actually went 1-6 his rookie year. But then he went 11-5 and 8-8.
Oh, so that wasn't the bad part of it. Okay.
Yeah, like the really bad stretch for him was after he turned 30. Like after he turned 32. He turned 32 in 2013. 7-9, 6-10, 6-10, then an 11-5 renaissance, 3-12, 5-11, 1-3.
I think the only thing about Eli Manning that I don't like about, well, it's not the only thing, but okay, you get extra credit for the Super Bowl victories, and he made some incredible plays in the clutch in those Super Bowl victories. But I always feel like, all right, well, but it is the quarterback position, and in those games, you might as well give a couple of the defensive linemen Hall of Fame bids for it too, because they...
Oh, for those Giants
games. Those Giants games in the Super Bowl. It was as much about the pass rush for guys who were, you know, OCU Mignora should be in the Hall of Fame then as well.
Right.
Because they were brilliant and because they were awesome in a couple of Super Bowl runs. But somehow for the quarterback, none of the other regular season stuff matters except for those two Super Bowls.
Eli's record after age 32 was 39-60. And that included an 11-5 season.
How many Pro Bowls did he make?
Four.
Oh. How many times was he All-Pro?
Zero. Zero. Oh,
gosh.
Yeah.
He was a solid NFL quarterback.
Solid.
He wasn't like he wasn't even anywhere close to a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Solid. Okay.
But he's a first
solid,
ballot.
Does solid equal good?
Why, Sean? Because he played in New York, man. It's a Northeast.
Well, and his last name is Manning.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Those two things, I think, for sure. So then my acknowledgement isn't for Eli. It's the opposite. My acknowledgement is for the John McClanes of the world in advance, not letting Eli in.
Well, Eli, if I hear a single mention of Archie Manning in any argument for why Eli Manning should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, I just like, what are we even doing here? Is this an aristocracy?
Yeah.
Is this Prince William all of a sudden?
Oh,
what the hell?
Oh, my God. All right, let's give away those football tickets. Caller number five wins a four-pack of tickets to this Saturday's U of H Iowa State game. 713-572-4610. That's 713-572-4610. We've got U of H tickets to give away every day this week. So keep it tuned here to Sports Radio 610. We got Monday Night Football tonight here on Sports Radio 610. Jacksonville and Buffalo, the Texans' next two opponents, play each other tonight. I think this is an interesting one. Who are you rooting for in tonight's game? I think probably tells you about what you think about the Houston Texans on the heels of yesterday's blowout loss to the Minnesota Vikings. I'll explain coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
I didn't realize there were so many Eli Manning honks out there listening to our show. If Kurt Warner, this is a text message, if Kurt Warner is a Hall of Fame quarterback. Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. Kurt Warner was a two-time MVP.
Yeah.
And two-time first-team All-Pro. Like, Kurt Warner individually had great seasons. Not a ton. And I think you're on the right track in terms of, like, the fringe layer quarterback. Of comparing Eli Manning to Kurt Warner is a solid argument on your part, Texter. But to me, like, small windows of truly great play, to me, play more into, especially football, where the careers are kind of short.
Yeah.
Play for Hall of Fame level conversation more so than just compiling a bunch of stats. And I know Eli won two Super Bowls.
Right. But there was never an actual season where Eli looked like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Not even close.
It was very much he was great and he was good in these clutch moments. That was huge, but those were team Super Bowl victories with the Giants that didn't, in terms of putting together a Hall of Fame career.
Right.
It's really the fact that he played for the Giants and that his last name is Manning that wants you to put, you're a sucker for the aristocracy. You would have been a red coat back in the, basically, if you want Eli Manning and think that he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer, it's un-American.
Do you think he gets in? Do you think?
Oh yeah, 100% he'll get in. Yeah.
First ballot?
Not first ballot.
Okay.
No.
I mean that's what those odds were saying. I would love to go the other way on the odds of getting in first ballot.
I think there's enough crusty old voters that are like, no, well, not on the first ballot. No.
Yeah. I can't remember if I talked to John about that, McClain, like where he is on Eli Manning.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I had conversations with him. See, like texts like this. I don't understand that Eli Manning isn't a good quarterback argument. Knowing where he went in his career, any owner or coach would trade C.J. Stroud for Eli Manning. Yeah, if I knew that the quarterback was going to win two Super Bowls,
I would.
Yeah. If there were some janky-ass quarterback out there whose career got two Super Bowl wins, and we've got C.J. Stroud, and I know that I'm getting two Super Bowls, I would trade C.J. Stroud for two Super Bowls.
If you're guaranteeing yourself
you're guaranteeing
Super Bowl,
me two Super Bowls. Sorry, C.J.
Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks of the century, and he's got one Super Bowl victory.
One.
Right?
Yeah,
I would trade Aaron Rodgers for Eli Manning if I knew for slam dunk certain that he was going to have two Super Bowl victories. Yeah.
This Monday night game tonight is interesting. Jacksonville at Buffalo. It's the next two opponents for the Texans, for one thing. They play Jacksonville at home next week and Buffalo at home in week five. Buffalo's undefeated. The Jags are winless. So the Jags are, you know, kind of teetering a little bit right now. Boy, there's so many angles I can go to this game tonight, Seth, with as far as who I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
Like, on the one hand, Jacksonville coming in at 0-3 are going to be a completely desperate team coming in here, which is, I don't know that that's great for this Texans team just because they're not wired like a put-away kind of team. You know what
I mean?
Like a foot-on-the-throat kind of team.
No, they're a let's hope Caleb Williams and Anthony Richardson screw it up enough for us.
Yes, they're,
that,
they're
that we
a,
can win.
When they lose, they get blown out, and when they win, they barely win.
Right.
So, I don't know if I want them coming in 0-3. I think it's interesting because if the Texans had won yesterday against Minnesota, I think you could make an and they were 3-0. I think you can make an argument that Texan fans should be rooting for the Jags because, and again, it's only 3 weeks into the season. Ultimately, the Texans may be competing more with the Bills for seeding in the AFC than the Jags for the AFC South Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were 3-0, the Texans, I might be rooting for the Jags tonight just to knock off the Bills and put them at 2-1.
There's a part yesterday where I was actually almost kind of happy that the Colts at least won a game. I'm glad somebody else in the AFC South won a game just because it's not, I don't want the Texans to have a guaranteed playoff spot just because they got off to a 2-0 start. And they had such a cushion over the rest of the league that that it says, oh, it's another AFC South champs, Brian. AFC South champs.
Yeah.
AFC South champs, Brian, lingers large in the minds of a lot of us to where it's not enough anymore, okay? I can't just win a paltry division.
Right.
So, having said all that,
doesn't matter, Brian.
What?
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Brian T. Smith.
Brian got banished to England. He's like one of these Eli Manning lovers.
He did.
That's better off in America, better off in Britain than in America.
Yeah.
So he is. Brian T. Smith he's writing for some English publication though.
Yeah, his wife got a big time job over there.
Oh, good for him.
In London. Yeah. Good stuff.
He's probably wearing like tweed coats.
Oh, yeah.
Shooting clay pigeons. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, okay. I want the Bills to do well. I look at Josh Allen. And I want him to be better than Trevor Lawrence in every way, which he already is, but I just want to continue that. I think I underestimated the Bills in some regards so far. It's early in the season, but I think they deserve credit for having lost. They lost like, they didn't just lose veteran free agents. They lost like five of their captains
from last year. Lost Micah Hyde. They lost Jordan Poyer. They lost, Matt Milano was still on the team, but they lost him to an injury in training camp.
Another guy by the name of Stephon.
Doing a nice job.
Guy by the name of Stephon Diggs. Yeah.
They traded him to the Texans.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of pressure on the Texans right now for having an embarrassment of riches at wide receiver, and you can only blame cover two for so long before you got to start figuring out, all right, we've got one of the very best wide receiver rooms in the league, and yet we've got a moribund passing offense.
Look
what the hell's going on here.
Are you more frustrated by the play of the offensive line or the fact that Bobby Slowik has not come up with a counterpunch yet to what teams are doing to them defensively?
Well, I think all the counterpunches involve the offensive line, too.
You've got to
run
the
ball.
That's true.
You got to be able to run the ball behind the offensive line.
Kind of inextricably linked to each other.
Yeah, which ultimately comes back on Bobby Slowik.
Yeah.
I think his lack of a counterpunch, it's almost like Phil Maton saying that he can't go out and pitch the next night because he broke his hand. We're like, yeah, but you did it to yourself.
Yeah.
So Bobby Slowik might not have a counterpunch because the offensive line isn't playing well. But, oh, yeah, he's the offensive coordinator. He's not the pass game coordinator like he was in the 49ers. He's the offensive coordinator.
Correct.
And as of right now, like, where do the Texans rank offensively right now?
They were, the stat they showed yesterday, they were 12th going into yesterday's game.
Okay, so they're,
something
they actually,
like that.
Well,
they were like in the upper third.
If you go
third.
By yardage, they had, they amassed yardage against a softer, I mean, I was kind of let down in the second half because I didn't get to watch all the super fun stuff that the Vikings defense does. They weren't doing all the funky stuff nearly as much because they didn't have to.
Yeah. Text message, I'm rooting for Jacksonville. We should be able to lock up the AFC South even after yesterday's poor performance. I'm looking at the race for the number one seed in the AFC home field advantage for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I like where your head's at, Texter. Don't let yesterday get you down. Keep that optimism up. I like it.
So the one that matters more than yardage or anything else is scoring. The Texans right now are, I believe, 21st in points per game.
Yeah, and their point differential took a hit yesterday.
Yeah.
They won two close games, and then they got blown out. So they're like a minus 19, I think, point differential.
And, like, yards per game, great. Hey, they're in the top 10. I don't care. Score points.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't rely on Kymie Fairbairn to bail you out at the 40-yard line every time.
Nope.
When your offensive line at least doesn't false start three times in a row.
Antibodies to you.
Antibodies and so forth. It'll be a better week this week.
It will. It will. It'll be good. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Till then, have a great day, everybody.